I just wanted to welcome you to today's internet seminar on negotiations trainings for OSCs. This is module one. This is the first module in a four-part seminar series. Each module is being delivered twice, so if you are here to receive credit for this training, you need to participate in one of the four sessions. You don't have to take all eight, but you have to do module one, two, three, four. You can schedule or sign up for them at your convenience, whichever makes sense for you. So if you signed up for all eight, you can go ahead and cancel out of four of them. You just have to take one of each of the deliveries. Again, this session has been sponsored by the EPA's Office of Superfund Remediation and Technology Innovation. This is Jean Mallett coming from the same office, and I'll be serving as today's moderator for the seminar. Again, we're going to get started in about 2 or 3 minutes, and I'm going to give a few late comers a couple of seconds to get situated and get themselves online. I have a couple of emails coming in. And we have some late participants joining us. But while we're waiting for them to hop on the line, I just wanted to remind everyone, Clue-In seminars are self-directed at verbal cues. So this is very similar to a conference call. The instructors will be indicating when to move through the materials, and you will be responsible for either clicking through the slides in your web browser or flipping through the printed versions or flipping through them in PowerPoint if you've downloaded that format. You should already have the slides available in front of you, and everybody should be looking at the title slide, slide number one. If you don't, you can go ahead and go back to the confirmation email. And in that email, there were links to download the slides or a seminar homepage where you could read the description of today's events, look for contact information for the instructors as well as myself, and then again, also access the slides online or download them in a variety of formats. I'm going to remind everybody, if you're on the phone lines, please put your phone on mute. I can hear some background conversation. So I want to be sure, if you're on the phone lines, hit star 6 to mute your phone. When we get to the portions for interactions or questions with the instructors, we'll give you instructions and remind you to take yourself off of mute by hitting pound 6, but until then we ask that you hit star 6 to keep yourself on mute. Don't put the call on hold. That also could potentially bring on commercials or other disruptions. And I do have a report that there's some echo coming in from Region 1, and I'm going to ask that the contractors go ahead and touch base with you to see if they can resolve the issue. If there is echo, you can always dial into the telephone line if you want to cut back on the streaming audio portion. Everyone should be moved past slide number 1, which is the title slide, and moves on to slide number 2, and that's our housekeeping slide. Again, you can either flip through the slides if they're printed, or you can use the numbered slide links which appear on the left side of the slides online. There will also be a series of orange icons along the top if you're streaming the audio or looking at the slides online. If you use the single arrow button pointing to the right, it will move you forward one slide. The single arrow pointing to the left will move you backwards one slide. There's another important button that I want to point out, and I think a number of you have already discovered it, and that's the question mark icon button. If you click on that question mark, making sure your pop-up blockers have been disabled, a new window will open up, and you'll be able to submit an electronic comment or question. And that's going to be pretty important throughout today's session because there will be periods of interactive discussions with the instructors where they'll be asking you to think about certain scenarios and ask you to jot down your thoughts. So you want to be sure to be able to use that question mark icon if you're streaming the audio so that you can submit that type of feedback and interact with the instructors. If at any point, though, you have questions or you want to provide a comment on what you heard, go ahead and use that question mark icon, and then at the appropriate time or when there's a point in the presentation, the speakers or I will read those comments off on your behalf. Again, you don't have to wait. You can submit those comments or questions at any time. You can also use that very same form if you need to report technical problems. Just be sure that you include a telephone number where we can reach you so that our support staff can help troubleshoot the problem. Again, you will be responsible for navigating yourself through the materials at verbal cues of the instructors, and I can still hear some feedback in the background, so again, please hit star 6 or mute your line. When we are all done with today's presentation, I'm going to direct you to two links that will be on the very final slide for today's session. The first one is a link of some additional resources that have been collected, as well as an option to download the presentation. The second link is incredibly important if you're looking to get credit for today's session, and that's the feedback form. The feedback form has been customized. There are some special fields in there that you will need to fill out with the correct information. Our instructors will be providing what's called a secret password today, and you need to supply that secret password in your feedback form in order to get credit for your participation today. I'll do a quick roll call, but again, in order to get credit for this course, you have to take one of each of the four modules, and you need to successfully submit a feedback form with the correct, valid secret password submitted. And I will be sure to remind everybody about that when we get there. So if you are sharing the line with a number of people, each individual participant has to fill out the feedback form on their own. Once you fill out that form, there's a link to let the next person go ahead and fill out their own version of the form. So you can have multiple people submit their own feedback forms from the same computer. If you have any questions about this, go ahead and feel free to shoot me an email after the session, and I'll walk you through that process. The session is going to be recorded and archived. Usually you can get to these archive sessions on the Clue-In training calendar. There's links for archive sessions. You can also subscribe to our Clue-In podcast for free if you want to receive the latest training as soon as they're available. I also want to remind everybody again, this session is going to require some interaction with you. So those of you streaming the audio, you want to be sure to be able to type up your comments when prompted, or jot down your ideas for those scenarios. Those of you on the phone lines, we will have a chance to kind of take you off of mute and interact with you that way. But we want to be sure that you're prepared to interact with the instructors and make sure you listen for that secret password. And the last reminder again, if you want to get credit for this course, you must take one of each of the four modules. Each one is being delivered twice. And you'll need to be able to successfully complete a feedback form for each module with the correct secret password supplied. And I will remind everybody of that at the end. So before I turn things over to our instructors today, I'm going to do a very quick roll call to make sure I have a correct representation here. I'm going to start, and I think some of you participated in a previous session where we did roll calls online. So if you're on the telephone and I call your name, please take yourself off of mute and say here, or go ahead and use that question mark icon if you're looking at the slides online and type up a comment. Same thing for the streaming audio participants. Again, I know you can't verbally indicate that you're there, but you can type up a comment and let me know that you're there. If you are sharing the line with multiple people, please let me know who else is with you, so I'll mark you as being present for today. All right, so the first one I'm going to read off is Earl Liverman coming in from Coeur d'Alene.
I'm here, but I'm up in Alaska, and I'm lucky even to have a phone. So my ability to participate is going to be limited, but I'm here with Bell.
Okay. Great. Thanks so much, Earl. I appreciate that. I know we have Margaret Ross and Deb Dalton on the line. How about Catherine Young from Boston?
Hi. This is Cosmo Caterino.
Okay.
We're trying to do this in our EOC.
Okay.
We get the webinar, but for some reason we can't talk on the microphone. So in the room we've got Kathy Young, Janice Hang, Tom Condon, Tom Mitsopoulos, Mike Nalipinski, and England, and myself. And what I'll do is I'll fill out an attendance sheet.
Beautiful. Great. And then remember, each one of you guys will need to fill out that feedback form individually, but you can call me and I'll show you how to do that afterwards today if you have any problems. Okay, great. Thank you so much. The next person on the line coming in from hopefully California, or you have Terry who's on the line. How about Todd in Kansas City?
Hey.
Todd, are you there?
Yeah, Jen, this is Don Leininger in the Region 7 REOC.
Okay. Are you sharing the line with anybody else there? Todd, I don't know if you're there or not. I have a number of other people that are listed from Kansas City. For example, Scott Hayes, is he with you in the room? All right. Well, Todd, I know that there may be an issue with the audio, so if there's a problem, go ahead and use that streaming simulcast. You can shoot me an email. Just let me know if there's anybody else in the room with you, Todd. Okay. I'm going to switch over to the streaming simulcast individuals. Again, I know you can't verbally respond, so you'll need to use the little question mark icon. Be sure your pop-up blockers are disabled and just type a message so that I know that you're there and listening to me. If you can't get that to work for some reason, you can also shoot me an email at some point. This is valent.gene@epa.gov. We're just looking for a confirmation that you're at least here when we start. So I'm just going to read these names off. It looks like we have Diane Detling, Laura Stanley, Terry Kish, Adam Adams, Andy Smith, Jason Musante, Michelle, and I'm not going to pronounce T from Edison, New Jersey. I don't want to mispronounce your last name. Karen Way, which I think we've got a confirmation from Cosmo already. Susan Fisher, I think, again, also we have confirmation. I'm looking to see if perhaps Ted Bezanis from Boston is there with you, Cosmo, if you can shoot me a message and let me know if Ted's there. Angelica from Seattle. Richard Franklin from Portland. Ian Wells from Wilmington, Tom from Carson City. Let's see, we have a couple of other people from Boston. Also, Joyce Hackerman, if you're on from Denver, go ahead and let me know. Again, the guys from Region 7, if anybody else is in there with you, Todd, shoot me a message. Margaret Alferman from Edison. Michael Boykin from Seattle. I got other individuals from Boston. Daniel Heister from Portland. Akil from Edison, I see your message, so thank you. Let's see, Don Lineger, again, are you also in the Region 7 OSC, or if you're on the line, let me know. And then I have Mia Pasquarella, my apologies. I think you should be, perhaps, if you're on the line with the other Region 1 guys, let me know. I see Wing, your name is here, but again, if you're on the line with Cosmo, please let me know. And same thing, I already see Tom is here. And then the last name is a Marcus Holmes, also coming in from Region 1. So please, if you're streaming the audio and you heard me call your name out, please shoot me a message. If you didn't hear me call your name out and you're streaming the audio, please, by all means, go ahead and use the comment form to type up and let me know that you're there. So with that, I am going to direct everybody. I see all the messages are coming in. I will go ahead and update my roster. I'm going to ask everyone to move on to slide number 3. I appreciate everybody's patience as we get situated and get scheduled to start today. And with this, I'm going to officially turn things over to our instructors. Again, for today's presentation, you should be here to learn negotiations trainings for OSCs. This is the first module of a 4-part series. And the basic presentation is planned to help you learn the basic principles of successful negotiations and collaboration so that you can reach suitable and implementable solutions. I'm going to turn things over to Margaret Ross from EPA's Conflict Prevention and Resolution Center. Margaret, are you ready?
Yep, sure.
Okay, great, thanks.
Okay, can everybody hear me okay?
You're coming through perfectly fine, and just a reminder, everyone should be on slide number 3, and your instructors will announce as they move through the materials.
All right, well, we're on slide 3. We just wanted to do a little bit of introduction so you know who we are and a little bit about our background. I'm Margaret Ross, as she said. I work for the EPA's Conflict Prevention and Resolution Center. A little bit about my background with negotiations. I started with the EPA in 1998 doing international trade negotiations. So I would help run all of the intra and inter-agency discussions to come up with U.S. government for the U.S.-Chile free trade negotiation and also for implementation of the environmental side agreement to the NAFTA. I've also worked as a mediator for environmental disputes, and now I'm here in EPA's CPRC. With that, I would love it if Deb is here, if she could introduce herself quickly.
Yep, this is Deb Dalton. I've been with EPA since 1976, which makes me really young. I started in pesticides enforcement and moved on in December of 82 Superfund enforcement, where I was for 6 years before going into private practice as a mediator doing Superfund cleanup negotiations. Since 88, I've been with the EPA's Conflict Prevention and Resolution Center and its predecessors, doing mediation, doing facilitation, helping folks with various Superfund issues, but also issues throughout the rest of the agency. When I was with the Superfund program, I was the headquarters technical liaison for 7003-106 federal court litigation, coordinating with Region 1 and Region 9. Terry, you're up.
Hi, and it's good to see a lot of familiar names on that list. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Terry Brubaker. Started with the agency in 72, spent 10 years in enforcement. I had a lot of negotiations during that time. And then I spent 20 years as the removal manager in Region 9. Wrapped that up with a 9-month detail on headquarters where I was the senior liaison to the Postal Service for the anthrax sites, and that was a complex negotiation, too. Since 2002, I've been an independent consultant, doing training, exercises, and things like this.
Great. Thank you. If you guys can move on to slide number 4, we will do the last of the housekeeping reminders, I promise. You guys have signed in. We've done the roll call. Just want to remind you that getting your certificate is predicated on attending the deliveries of four modules. I want to make a correction. We just learned that you don't need to attend live deliveries of all four modules. I believe that there was an update and that you can access two deliveries from the archives if you need to. And I don't know if you guys want to pass the word on about that, but that is a change. And is there anything more you want to say about that, Deb? No? Okay.
Gary has said that that they need to listen to the audio archive of it, not just flip through the slides on that. And
right.
The feedback form, which will include the secret password of the day.
Right. Thanks, Jeff. Okay, and when you're filling out that final evaluation form, we really do appreciate those and use them. So this is a maiden voyage for this training online, and so if you have any comments about the technology, about the delivery, just please feel free to share your thoughts with us. We'd be happy to hear them. Okay. Moving on to slide 5. At the end of this course, we want you to be able to do the following things. We want you to be able to recognize opportunities to apply interest-based negotiation skills in your work, in your life. We want you to understand, be able to explain three basic components of interest-based negotiations and describe how you would apply each during the course of a negotiation. We want you to identify three basic communication skills that you can use in any negotiation. We're going to explain four types of people problems, and we want you to be able to match those people problems, identify them, and match them to appropriate strategies and skills that you can use to overcome them. Of course, we want you to know when it's a good idea to involve a facilitator or mediator, and we'll talk a little bit about that. So feel free, feel free to ask questions or contribute your expertise at any time. We are going to actually ask you for examples and ideas as we go through, so be ready for that. And we happen to have some intelligence on some of you, so it's possible that you may have an occasion to hear your name called out if we know that you've worked on a particular kind of exemplary case. So pay attention. All right, does anybody have any questions about that? Okay. Let's move on to slide 6. So this is a 4-module, 8-hour course, and now you know what we hope to teach you during those 8 hours, and here's how we're going to divide up the material. Module 1, this is a really foundational module. We're going to focus on language concepts related to interest-based negotiation, and this is just focused on making sure that we have a shared language and framework for thinking about negotiations throughout the next 3 modules. Modules 2 and 3 are going to focus on building different types of skills that you're going to use in negotiations, communication skills, and a little bit of problem-solving skills when it comes to people and obstacles. In Module 4, we're going to review what we've learned, and we're also going to be bringing in Dan Dozier, who's a very experienced Superfund mediator, and you all are going to have the opportunity to bring him questions about the nastiest, hairiest situations that you've seen or been in, and see if he can give y'all some good answers, solutions, strategies for the next time those kinds of problems come up. And I know that there's one situation in particular, and we'll be touching base where we know that there are folks out there who have really crazy experiences, and we'll be encouraging you to bring those in. Can we move on to slide 7? Slide 7 is just about what we're going to do today. So what we're going to cover in the next couple of hours. We're going to talk about what this thing is, negotiation. What is it? We're going to talk about three major phases of negotiation. We're going to talk about, most importantly, the key concepts in negotiation. We're going to talk about negotiation styles. And on the kind of right-hand side of this slide, you'll see that there are some little chevrons there. These are going to be in the upper left-hand corner of each slide to show you what section we're on. And also where there are subsections, I'll put them down on the bottom towards the right-hand side so you can see what section and which subsection we're on at any point in the call, okay? All right, moving on to slide 8. Let's get started. So what is negotiation? What are we talking about here? This is the definition that we found that we like the best. To confer with others in order to come to terms or reach agreement. Now, just to start things off with some conversation, can anybody out there give me an example of when you might confer with others in order to reach agreement? Does anybody have any examples from their life where they might do this with their work? For those of you who are logged in, feel free to go ahead and type in your ideas. And those of you who are on the phone, feel free to take yourself off mute and shout out.
This is just a reminder to unmute, you hit #6. What about something like deciding where to meet some friends for drinks? Or before you accept a new job, maybe talking about salary, benefits, those kinds of things. Does anybody else have any experiences from work? Wow. Well, basically we do this all the time.
Let me just make sure that we're looking at a broad context here. This is Terry, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, negotiations, people tend to think of this in terms of enforcement actions and, dealing with RPs or PRPs. But actually, negotiations are something we do within the office, with other programs, with program support people, with states. So it's really something that's it's an everyday sort of thing. And so many of our toughest negotiations aren't with PRPs. They're with, the contract shop or ORC or the states or people like that. So think about those kinds of situations where you've had problems with coming to an agreement with another party, whoever that party might be.
Thank you, Terry. And we just got another suggestion, buying a house. It's another time when you're trying to confer with somebody to come to agreement, for sure. We just wanted to point out that while we're focused here on your jobs as OSCs, and thinking about negotiations there, these are skills and concepts that you'll be able to use in any discussion or encounter that you might have with anybody. So here are some other ones. Obtaining access agreements from a PRP or negotiating with somebody over a post-removal site control. Those are great examples. So this comes up all the time. Now, let's move on to slide 9. What are the phases of a negotiation? Now, before we start that, does anybody have any questions about anything that we've talked about so far? Okay. Let's move on to phases of negotiation, and congratulations. We are now on the second section of this work, so you've already finished the whole first section. It's only been 10 minutes. So on slide 10, moving on to the next slide. I'm sorry?
Again, if you're on the telephone, please mute your lines. This would also go for the other instructors. If you're not in the same room, you want to hit star 6 to remute your line so we don't have that echo. All right, so looking at typical negotiation, there are three major phases: preparation, negotiation, and implementation. For each of these, we are going to look at why you should care and what kinds of things you might do in each phase. So moving on to slide 11, preparation, the first phase. Move on to slide 12. See, quickly, we're just flying through here. All right, why should we care about preparations? You're at a distinct advantage when you have prepared and the other side hasn't. You're at a disadvantage when you haven't prepared and the other side has. You can use this time to anticipate the needs of others and, in doing so, cut down on negotiation time. And just a reminder that this is a really great return on investment. Just a few minutes, even if you take 15 minutes to think through, you know, who these folks are, what you need, what they need, set out some priorities, it can go a really, really long way. So now I want you to imagine a time in your life where being prepared helped you out. And make a quick note. If you want to, go ahead and write it down. Now, also, I want you to think about a time when you weren't prepared for a situation and it put you at a disadvantage. Now, I'm going to give you guys a couple of seconds to think about those things. And if you're online, go ahead and type your thoughts up. Now, I want to ask a couple of questions. For the first scenario, what was it about the preparation that helped you? And so you can take yourself off mute if you're on the phone or type in your thoughts on the question mark. And while we're waiting for some of these things to populate, I'm going to let you know the second question is going to be talking about what didn't work. Okay? So let's see if we have any responses yet. And again, if you're on the phone lines, it's simply #6 to take yourself off of mute.
All right, so has anybody ever prepared for a discussion with, like, their boss, maybe, or any thoughts?
Okay, well, let me give you an example of a time that I was at. I was going with a White House representative to a meeting of ASEAN? It was APEC, the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation. And there were going to be countries and ministers from all of the Pacific Rim nations who belong to APEC. And I was just reading through headlines from some of the people that I knew that we were going to have bilateral discussions with. And it was being hosted in Mexico City, so I was reading newspaper things, what was going on in Mexican news. And it just so happened as I was doing that, I came across a story about concern on the U.S.-Mexico border on the Mexican side about a proposed dump for radioactive waste, and that there was a group of indigenous people who were going to be going on a hunger strike. And I, you know, read the article, and then I went to Mexico City, and I was with the science and technology minister from the White House, and in between sessions, a member of the press came up and asked him in Spanish what he thought about this hunger strike that was going to be going on and what the EPA and what the U.S. government was going to be doing about it. And because I knew the situation, I was able to pull him aside. First of all, I happened to also speak Spanish, so that was helpful. And I was able to tell him what the question was really about and coach him on what was going on and what was happening with the EPA and where kind of talks were at.
because he wasn't familiar with the situation at all. And so I was able to kind of help him get out of a sticky situation by preparing a little bit. Does anybody have any similar experiences? If not, I will let it go and we can move on.
There were comments that came in about preparing from the online submissions.
Oh, there they are. Thank you. Ah, great. Preparing to help, oh, preparation helped anticipate objections to a settlement agreement. That's great. Preparation for a challenging public meeting. We considered other points of view and how to show that EPA actions were addressing their concerns. Preparing for a job interview, that's a really common one. Anticipating questions from your interviewer. And, wow, there are a bunch. Great. When I was standing at the top of the aisle, I was not getting married. I was not prepared. So that's the next question is, when weren't you prepared? And I'll give you a quick story about not quite being prepared, and I will look for some more ideas from you. It's just important to think through how preparation or not doing preparation can impact our lives and our outcomes. I was applying to graduate schools, and I had an interview with Stanford, in fact, and I was super excited about it. And I thought that I was, you know, golden. I'd always done really well in interviews, and I thought, this is great. This is, I can handle whatever they throw at me. But I totally bombed. I hadn't prepared for this particular kind of interview, and they framed their questions in ways that I had never faced before, and I really struggled to come up with answers. And so luckily, it was the first of several interviews that I had, so I was able to study up on the ways, different ways that people can ask these kinds of questions or the kinds of questions that they were looking for information on and be a little bit better prepared for the next ones. And I ultimately did get into grad school, so it worked out, but I did not get into Stanford. So my lack of preparation bummed me out on that one. And I'm just going to take another look at meeting up with residents prior to a residential cleanup. There were occasions where this person had been better prepared and not so well prepared, and that had an impact on how those meetings went. That's a great example. Okay. I am going to go ahead and move on to slide 13, and we'll talk about some of the things that we do during preparations. So on slide 13, some of the things you might want to do, you might want to identify the folks who are involved, identify the different stakeholders. You're going to consider the problem that you're facing, and there may be multiple issues that you're facing at once, so you're going to want to identify those. You're going to think about what you want and how badly you want it. And there are going to be some things, right, that you are not going to want to fall on your sword over, and then there are going to be other things that are 100% critical, and you are going to want to spend a little bit of time thinking about and figuring out what the differences are and how you might prioritize those. Did somebody have a question? Okay. So you're also going to want to think about how other folks see the problem, what, how they might see the same problem that you see, what might be their perspective. You're going to want to think about what they want and how bad they want it. Maybe your priorities line up and maybe they don't. Maybe there are places where you care about something and they don't, and maybe there are places where they care about something and you don't, and there might be room for some deals to be made in that way. You want to think about what kinds of things they might pursue, what strategies they might pursue. And then, ultimately, you're going to make a go, no-go decision about whether it makes sense to move forward with a negotiation or not, right? And you'll develop a plan for moving forward. And these two, last two items, I'm going to want to talk a little bit more about on slide 14. So if we can move forward to slide 14. How do I know whether negotiation is the best strategy available to me? And to get the answer to that question, we're going to seek advice from a sage of negotiation who happens to be in the office with us today. His name is Kenny Rogers.
Know when to fold up, know when to walk away, know when to run.
Wow, Ken, that's great advice. Thank you so much. We appreciate your coming in, by the way, Kenny. Thank you. So I am going to build on that a little bit. There are going to be other options, other things you can do than negotiation, potentially, to get where you need to go, right? There are some situations that may not require your negotiating. And so we're going to think a little bit about what those other options might be and how to weigh the pros and cons of those. So one of the first things you're going to want to figure out is what you can do on your own. What options are there out there that don't require your negotiating folks, partners, to be there at all, or certain stakeholders to be there at all? What could you do to them, to pressure them to meet your goals? So in this case, if you're thinking about access, if you absolutely, it's critical that you get access immediately. If there's a life and death situation, you can always get a warrant, get a marshal to come out and get you on that property. So there's something that you can do to them to pressure them to meet your goals. How can you use a third party to help further your interests? Now, we're not just talking about bringing in a mediator or a facilitator here, but thinking about the access situation again, if there's not quite as time-constrained a situation or it's not quite as critical, you might want to think about, you know, who does this property owner respect and admire in the community? Is there somebody like a mayor or a pastor that you might be able to talk to who could come in and talk to your property owner and might be able to sway them to see the light of reason? Then you need to sort through the pros and cons of using an alternative strategy. As you guys all know, going out and getting a warrant is a pain in the butt, and it is also may affect your relationship with that property owner for the future. So if you're going to have to work closely with that property owner in the future, or if that property owner is also a PRP and you're going to have to negotiate other things with them, having them be furious at you, if you can avoid it, might not be a good thing, I'm sorry. So then finally you want to think through how the other side might answer these questions, right? So you're going to want to think about what they can do on their own, what they can do without you, what they can do to you, whether there's anybody that they might be able to access who can help them with their interests. So all of these, we just want to set out these questions because negotiation might not always be the right strategy. You might need to walk away at some point, but you need to consider your alternatives carefully and know what the repercussions might be of following an alternative strategy. All right. Before we move on, now we can move on to slide 15. We're going to start talking about negotiation, but I wanted to give an opportunity for about 10 seconds. Let's see if anybody has any questions about anything that we've talked about with regard to preparations. All right. Okay, let's move on to slide 16. So we've just established that there might be other non-negotiated ways to get what we want, but sometimes there aren't. Sometimes the only way to deal with a particular problem is to negotiate and reach some kind of agreement with somebody else. Negotiations are an opportunity to build or improve relationships with folks when you'll be working with them again in the future. And this is an interesting one. Sometimes negotiating with others, sharing your perspective about what the problem is, and learning about somebody else's perspective can help you see possible solutions that you would not have come up with on your own. So just sharing those ideas makes you think differently about the problem and can help you generate some creative solutions you wouldn't have been able to think of on your own. So let's move on to slide 17, and we can talk about what kinds of things you might do during a negotiation. You might share how you see the situation. You might ask about how other people see the situation. And this is critical, right? This should be kind of the first thing on the menu for you when you're opening up a dialogue with somebody or a negotiation with somebody. Sometimes just coming to a shared understanding of the situation or of the problem gets you 90% of the way to a solution. So after you talk a little bit about your perspective on the problem or the situation, you might want to say what it is you're looking for, what your goals are, what your interests are. You might want to ask the other side what it is that they're looking for. You might discuss possible options for solutions, and hopefully you'll figure out a way to choose the best solution. And then you guys will either come to agreement or not, so there'll be a go or no-go decision about a proposed solution. And then maybe you'll start thinking about a plan for moving forward, maybe do some planning for implementation of the agreement. Does anybody have any questions about the negotiation phase before we move on? All right, let's move on to slide 18. So this is the last phase, implementation. We'll move on to slide 19. So implementation, why should I care about implementation? We're talking about negotiations. Who cares about what happens after the agreement is reached? So let's say you decide to meet somewhere for drinks with your friends, and then your friends don't show up, or they go to a different bar, or they get lost along the way. The decision that you reached, the agreement that you reached about where to go is, you know, not worth a whole lot. And it certainly wouldn't be as fun. So all of those kinds of problems, those are all implementation problems. So you're going to want to think about the fact that the agreement is only a promise to do something. You can only get what you want if you actually implement the agreement, right? So think ahead about some things that might help you in implementation, like safeguards, check-ins, consequences for not fulfilling commitments. So in the case of meeting your friends at the bar, if ahead of time you know, does everybody know how to get there? Does everybody have a cell phone number that they can call so that, you know, we can meet there? Those are some types of implementation planning that you can do in advance, and you can even codify in an agreement if you have a written agreement so that you know that folks will be able to implement their part of the bargain. And implementation, as you guys know, I'm sure more than anybody, implementation can be complex. And there might be problems arising that are completely unforeseen and may cause you to have to renegotiate. So you want to think about the importance of the implementation phase and think of it as a part of the overall negotiation. And finally, implementation is just another opportunity to build relationships. Moving on to slide 20, what kinds of things do you do during the implementation phase? This poor woman here lying on the couch, having her head examined, is dreaming that one day she might see some results. Implementation is how you get results. So during implementation, you're going to fulfill your obligations under a negotiated agreement, and you're going to validate that the other side has fulfilled their obligations under the negotiated agreement. So that part is the trust but verify, right? So there's a leap of faith that you make when you're negotiating with somebody, and then you also want to validate that they are actually doing what they said they would do. And you're also going to examine whether the negotiated agreement that you reached has resolved all of the issues maybe as you implement, you realize that there are still a couple of things that need to be dealt with, and you might want to go back to those and negotiate those issues. Now, does anybody have any questions before we move on? This is the end of Section 2 on the phases of negotiation, so we're going to move on. I want to make sure that we answer any remaining questions about any of the three phases of negotiation. All right. Everybody is totally up to speed. That's great. So let's move on to slide 21. We're going to now start talking about styles of negotiation. And let's just go ahead and jump in on slide 22. We are going to explore some of the various ways that there are to confer with others. We're going to focus on three types of negotiation styles: soft bargaining, hard bargaining, interest-based negotiation. We're going to talk about what each style is and why your negotiating style matters. So let's move on to slide 23. What are negotiation styles? Now, I'm not saying that these are the only possible negotiation styles out there, but these are three kind of big categories that we see pretty commonly. There's soft bargaining, which is also known as accommodation or conflict avoidance. Now, soft bargaining is a great way to avoid conflicts, and you might use soft bargaining when, for example, you're meeting a new person, and you might need to work with this person for a long time, and you're just kind of exploring, trying to figure out who this person is and what it's all about, and you might not want to deal with any conflicts right at the beginning of that relationship, so you're a little bit more willing to accommodate their point of view. So in that case, the relationship is preserved, but if it continues for too long, there may be exploitation that's going to create a power imbalance and cause some problems down the road. And the other part of that is if you're in a situation where you're constantly accommodating somebody else, you might also be having to do all of the work, right? So implementation might fall to a single party. So there are pros and cons. It should definitely be used in some cases and maybe not so much in others. Another case where this is commonly used is when you're working with somebody who's in a position of authority over you, right? So you might not want to pick any fights with your boss, for example. The second style that we're going to talk about is hard bargaining, and we also refer to this as positional bargaining or traditional negotiations, and those are terms that you'll probably hear us mention throughout the rest of this course, so keep those in mind. Now, hard bargaining, this positional bargaining, this is a contest of wills. This is a situation where persistence and endurance, you know, fight wins, and power can win. So these types of hard bargaining may not be considered fair by everybody at the table, right? And so there might be a situation where somebody didn't get everything that they needed, but they caved because of some kind of power imbalance or they just couldn't deal with it anymore. But that doesn't mean that they're not going to continue to seek redress, potentially in other forms or in other ways. So again, there may be occasions where hard bargaining is the only way through it. Maybe it's you have a long-standing relationship with somebody who loves to bargain in this way and they can only understand how to do it in this way. Another example of a place where, you know, hard bargaining is kind of a venerated tradition, and it's as much about social communication as it is about whatever it is you're bargaining about, is in some cultures where buying things, haggling, and those kinds of hard bargaining, it's a part of the social interaction that's the fabric of the culture. And you wouldn't want to go into those situations and just accommodate, because actually doing that kind of bargaining is an important thing to do. Finally, interest-based negotiation. You'll also hear us call this principal negotiation or mutual gains bargaining. Now, this is just a way, a dialogue, to an opportunity to get what you need. In this case, all of the parties' interests can be met. That's how it's framed. And the goal is to get everybody's interests met. And parties can come to terms on underlying problems, implementation, verification, all of those kinds of things. Now, I'll throw the question out there. Does anyone have a feeling that they identify more with one of these than with the others? And again, please feel free to take yourself off mute or to type your response into the question section using the question mark button. Everybody is kind of uses equally these different styles. Okay, that's fine. Let's move on to slide 24. Why does your negotiation style matter? Now, I don't want to overstate this, because I'm going to be referring to a couple of academic papers, and I don't know whether these have been, you know, adequately peer-reviewed, et cetera. But your negotiation style can impact your results, and these, I have a couple of studies that I'm going to be referring to, and I'm happy to send them to folks who are interested. Does somebody have a question? Okay. I think there might be somebody walking who's talking on a cell phone.
Yeah, my guess is someone is not on mute. So, again, just a gentle reminder, please hit *6 to keep yourself on mute. Thank you so much.
Unless you have a comment or question, in which case I encourage you to take yourself off mute and share your thoughts. Okay. So, anyhow, there are a couple of studies that I'm going to refer to, and I'm happy to share those. Maybe I'll just go ahead and send them to you, Jean, so you can post them on the kind of other materials section of this course.
Sure, that'd be great.
Okay. So, these two studies, one of them is about the effects of goal revelation, and the other one is about goal framing in prediction of strategy revision and integrative agreements. I know it's a little bit dry sounding, but the gist of it is that framing goals in terms of your interests, in terms of your underlying goals, which is something we're going to talk a lot more about, allows you greater strategic flexibility and produces a greater likelihood of agreement, right? So when you're thinking about things, if you're thinking about the kind of solution that you want to drive towards as opposed to the kind of problem that you're trying to solve or the kind of interest that you have, it will hamper your ability to find solutions, especially if you come up against any kind of stumbling block or bump in the road. Also, sharing information about these underlying goals or interests with your negotiating partners increases the number of possible acceptable solutions, and negotiators who reveal their underlying goals actually improve the likelihood that they're going to reach their goals. These last two are important because I think a lot of times people are afraid of revealing too much. They're afraid that if they say what their goals are, that that's somehow going to be used against them. But what the study is saying essentially is that that's not true, that where negotiators reveal their underlying goals, the problems that they need to solve, right, they are far more likely to actually reach those goals. So these underlying goals that we're talking about, these are the interests that form the foundation of interest-based negotiation. Does anybody have any questions about that before we move on? Okay. All right, moving on to slide 25. Another reason that negotiation style matters is because it can impact your relationship with your negotiating partners. Now, we've talked about these a little bit already. Soft bargaining can lead to resentment. Hard bargaining can rely on coercion, bluffing, secrecy, and that can create resentment, power imbalances. All of these things are kind of, you know, as they occur in the long term, it can cause some problems. In a situation where a compromise is achieved using positional bargaining, it might be an agreement on some things, but maybe not other things. To the extent that you don't identify all the interests and reach all the interests, the same problems are going to keep coming up if they're not fully addressed. And interest-based negotiation, of course, focuses on sharing information, improving communications, meeting the needs of all the parties, and building long-term relationships. Going back and looking at the soft bargaining and the hard bargaining, you know, you might be thinking, you know, I'm only going to be negotiating with this person once. I'm only going to have to deal with this person once, and then I'm never going to see them again. So I'm going to do whatever I need to do in order to just get through this. Just remember that even if you don't have to work with the same person again, your organization may have to work with their organization in the future. Another thing is, you know, you might be the face of the EPA, and they might be working with the EPA. You might be the face of the federal government for these folks. So just kind of thinking about why some of these things might matter in other contexts. Does anybody have any questions before we move out of this section on styles and move into section on the basic components of interest-based negotiation? All right. So slide 26, here we go. What are the components of an interest-based negotiation? And moving into slide 27, what are the key components? The key components of interest-based negotiation, also some of the key principles, sometimes these are referred to as key principles of interest-based negotiation. We're talking about negotiating based on interests, generating multiple options, and using objective criteria to evaluate options. So for each of these three topics, we're going to talk about what it is, why you should care, and how to use it in a negotiation. And again, this is really the heart and soul of interest-based negotiation. This is kind of at the center of all of the things that we're going to be talking about throughout the next four modules. Okay? So let's move on to slide 28. We're going to start with the first section based on, the first section on interests, identifying interests. Okay. Slide 29, negotiating based on interests. Okay. Interests describe the needs, desires, and fears that cause people to want what they want, to do what they do, or to say what they say. And the ability to identify interests is the most important aspect of interest-based negotiations. So, interests describe the underlying problems that you're trying to solve. So when I came in this morning, I was really tired, and I thought to myself, self, I'm really tired, how am I going to fix this? And then I thought, oh, hey, I have an interest in being more awake, right? Now, some of you guys might think of examples from your own work where you have identified kind of underlying problems that you're trying to solve. So could you guys, actually maybe this would be a good time, could you guys send in some examples of common kinds of problems, common kinds of problems that you face as an OSC on the ground at your sites, and go ahead and either say them over the phone or send them in online. And just so that you guys know, one of the interesting things that I'm learning how to deal with is that my page that shows your responses only refreshes every 30 seconds. So if you have responded to one of my questions and I have not read out your answers, That's why, because I only see them every 30 seconds or so.
You can also just locally refresh the browser page. You don't have to wait for the 30 seconds.
Oh, see, you learn something new every day.
No problem.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Jean. Okay, so a problem might be a release of some hazardous chemical. Thank you. And let's think about that kind of situation and think about if that's the problem that you're trying to solve, let's think about what some of your interests might be as an OSC. So when the problem for me was that I was tired, my interest was to be more awake. Does anybody have any thoughts? I'm going to throw out a couple. Let's see if they resonate at all for you. Protecting people, protecting their health, right? Containing the release, maybe. Does anybody have any other thoughts? Let me check and see. Cleaning up the release. That is another one. Another thing might be there might be interests related to costs. Right? Yours, theirs, whomever's. Getting things paid up front as opposed to having to go back and collect might be an interest. So that's where we are with interests. Now, we're going to move on to the next slide and we're going to put together a counterpoint to that. Now, on slide 30, we introduce the term positions. Now, thinking back to this morning when I identified my interest in waking up and being more awake, a position would be, I need coffee. The underlying problem is that I'm tired, my interest is in being more awake, and my position is, I need a cup of coffee. In fact, drinking a cup of coffee is not really the only way to meet my interest, right? It's one of many. I could go jog up and down the stairs. That would put some oxygen in my bloodstream and help me wake up. I could drink tea, not coffee, or a Coca-Cola. There are a variety of different ways that I could meet my need to be more awake. I'm sorry. Hang on a second. Deb?
Yeah.
Okay. What are you doing?
What? I need this orange.
You just, I'm sorry, you guys, Ted Dalton just stole my orange.
But I need the orange. I really have to have this orange.
Deb, I woke up at 5:30 this morning so I could get that orange, and I need it too. That's why it's in my office.
Yeah, but I woke up early too and came in to do a training. No breakfast. I really need the orange.
Okay, you guys, I'm sorry. Deb, okay. Let me think about this for a second. So you're tired, or I'm sorry, you're tired. You're hungry. Is that
I'm
right?
Hungry. I'm hungry.
Okay, so you want to eat the orange.
I didn't eat breakfast. I need to eat the orange. I need to eat the inside of the orange.
Okay. It just so happens that I bought the orange because I am going to be creating a souffle tonight for dinner. It's really important. It's our anniversary, my husband and I, and I was going to put some orange zest into the souffle, and it's going to be a thing of beauty, fingers crossed. So I really only need the rind of the orange.
Ah, well, I was just going to throw the rind out. So, you know, if I could have your orange and eat the inside, I could give you back the peel. How would that work?
Oh, that would be great. You have an interest in being fed, and I have an interest in using the zest to make this great souffle that I'm going to make tonight. And so we can both have our interests met, even though there's a limited resource here.
Only one orange.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Awesome. So your position was that you wanted the orange. My position was that I wanted the orange. But when we identified our underlying goals, when we identified our interests, we were actually able to find a solution that met both of our interests given the scarce resources that we have. And at this time, I would like to take the opportunity to make sure that you guys all get the secret password. Doo-doo-doo. The secret password is orange. So when you're filling out your evaluation forms, make sure that in the field that asks you for the secret password, you type in orange. And for those of you who are going to be listening to this from the audio archives, same thing. When you fill out your evaluation form, make sure that you put the secret password orange in. Okay. Is everybody still with me?
Yep.
07. All right.
Yep, we're there.
Okay. Great. All right. So let's move on to slide 31. Talking about negotiating based on interest some more, and we're going to talk about why we should care about interests. We've talked about some of these before. Sharing interests can build trust. It can enhance relationships and joint learning. This is an interesting point. Each side can acknowledge the legitimacy of the other side's interest without agreeing to a proposed solution. So, once I know that Deb wants to eat the orange and I want to use the zest, even if we had the same interest, even if I had wanted to eat the orange and she had wanted to eat the orange, I would have been able to, like, acknowledge her interest in being hungry and without agreeing to giving her the orange. I might have been able to use that to say, oh, you're hungry. Well, that's fine. Let's figure out a way to get you fed. Here are a couple of dollars. You can just go to the cafeteria and get yourself your own darn orange, right? So there are multiple ways that we could address her interests once we know her interests.
No oranges down there at MTAM. No oranges. Sorry, no, this is the only orange.
Well, maybe you could eat a banana, Deb. There are a lot of different maybe. There are a lot of different ways to solve any possible problem, but at least you can acknowledge what the other side's interest is and acknowledge that it's a legitimate interest without having to go any further or agree to anything. So that's really important. Interests can be satisfied in different ways, right? When we're talking about coffee, it could have run up and down the stairs. I could have had a Coke or a cup of tea. We're talking about the orange. Deb could potentially have, you know, gone out and gotten some lunch or, you know, done something else to make sure that her interest in being fed was met. There are all kinds of solutions, and we're going to talk more about generating options to address our interests in the next section. Last bullet, if all interests are identified and met, the likelihood of agreement increases, and it improves trust and relationships, which allows for ability to overcome tough problems down the road. And I think that, Deb, you had a particular story about a facility where there was a fire.
Yes. Region 1, Ellie Tonkin in Region 1 had given us an example where a site up there had had a release, and it had been tough to get an access agreement and to deal with the PRP. And over some period of time, I think Ellie worked with them on that. Ellie is the ADR specialist in Region 1 with the OSC and with the site team, and managed to establish a relationship with the both the attorney and the site PRP, and managed to get the access and stuff over some tough negotiations. And where it came in handy in the future, even though, you know, we all hope that these sites never appear again, was apparently at some time later, months and months later, there was a fire at the site, and the OSC couldn't get hold of the PRP, but they had the lawyer's phone number, had established a relationship with that PRP's lawyer, could call that person up and get the access that much quicker because things had already been worked through.
That's a great example. Thank you. And before we go on any further, I just wanted to read out a couple more great examples that have come in on the kinds of interests that an OSC might have about the underlying problem of some kind of release. And let's see, some of the ideas that came in were locating and securing the source, negotiating about how clean is clean, gaining access to property where the owner is hesitant. Now, we'll talk a bit more about that in just a second. All right, so some of the, I think that there are some repetitions of some of those ideas. So it sounds like there are probably some things that are common to cleanups and releases and things like that. There might be some interest that you have in any given situation. Okay, so let's move on to slide 32 and talk about how we use interest in a negotiation. Now, before you negotiate, during the preparation phase, remember we're talking about figuring out how you see a problem? Figure out what your interests are. So not just how you understand the problem, but think about what your interests are. You can identify the underlying problem and identify your interests. And be sure to stay away from positions. So you want to keep asking yourself why you want this and get down to the bottom layer, as it were, right? So you want to get access to somebody's property so you could do some sampling and you can identify the source of the release. Your position is that you need to get access to this person's property, or that, you know, your sampling plan is the best sampling plan, but the underlying goal is to make sure you contain the release. Does that make sense to folks?
Yes,
I'm gonna. Okay, good. I'm just gonna assume that silence means, Margaret, we totally get this. We are so with you. We completely understand. In that kind of heartening way, I'm just gonna imagine you guys saying that. Okay, so imagine other parties' interests. That's another thing you're gonna wanna do. I think we talked about that right at the beginning when we talked about preparation. Keep an open mind. Imagine lots of different variables. Think about it. Think about what they might need. Do some prioritization. So separate the things that you absolutely need from the things that would be great. It would be great to have this totally cleaned up and have this removal complete in 2 weeks so I can go on vacation without having to worry about this anymore. That's an aspiration. The need is to make sure that it happens, that that things get cleaned up, that people are protected, right? So there's the bottom line, and there's the what we hope will happen. And finally, make sure to involve your team when you're thinking about interests. Make sure, you know, more heads are better than one when you're trying to come up with ideas about what your interests are. You might have to work with other offices within the EPA or state or local agencies and kind of come up with what their interests are. During negotiations, you're going to track new information about interests. Somebody in conversation might identify an interest that you hadn't heard before, and you're going to make note of it. You're going to be open to learning. You're going to ask good questions, and that's one of the communication skills that we're going to talk about in the next module, asking why and how and drawing people out so they'll start talking about their interests as opposed to their positions. You're going to generate options that address all interests. So when you're thinking about possible solutions, you're going to base those thoughts on the interests that you've identified. You're also going to use interests when you start developing evaluation standards, because the evaluation standards, the objective criteria that you use, are going to need to make sure that they evaluate based on interests as opposed to anything else. So it all goes back to interests. It's the most basic component of interest-based negotiation. Super, super, super important. Now, take a quick break for questions, if anybody has any questions.
If you're on the telephone lines, you can hit *6 to take yourself off of mute and ask your questions.
There are some great interests and positions here. So position might be, I want to buy this SUV. And the interest underlying that might be, I want a car with four-wheel drive because, you know, I've got to drive off-road and I need to be able to make it through the gullies and ditches, right? That's a great example. All right, so now we are going to do a little bit of a role play. And this is a role play that you can do on your own. You're going to play this role. You're going to ask yourself some questions. Hopefully you're going to share some of your thoughts with the group so everybody will get to benefit from your thoughts. But we're going to have you imagine a situation. I'm not sure if any of you guys have ever encountered something like this before, but imagine you're negotiating a soil sampling plan with a property owner. Hello? Who's also the PRP. And this PRP is being stand up, and they're taking responsibility, and there's general agreement that a sampling plan is going to need to be agreed upon, but now you're discussing the details, and the PRP is starting to get a little leery of EPA's proposed plan. So as you're negotiating, the PRP says, and very angry, he's very angry, you know perfectly well that sampling in that area is a complete waste of money, but you don't care because it's not your money. Right? Now, that is actually a quote that came from an OSC. As they told us of a situation that they were negotiating, or a PRP said that. And what we want you to do is take a couple minutes. It's probably going to be less than a couple minutes, but take some time to write down your thoughts about possible reactions to this statement, possible responses, and possible next steps that you might take. So I think Gene is going to cue up some music, which I'm not sure I'll be able to hear, but take a couple minutes, and we'll check in with you about your thoughts in just a few. And just a quick note, if you are logged in, please go ahead and type those in using the question button on the computer. That would be great. Thanks.
So again, as those of you who are having any sort of problems, just a reminder, in case you are, you can certainly email those ideas if you can't get the question mark icons to work. So we're going to queue up some music for just a few seconds. Bear with me while I get that one fixed for 1 second. Wrong thing was playing there.
During this time, you can imagine, if you want, the Rolling Stones. You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometime, you just might find you get what you need. Mm-hmm. I will spare you my own personal rendition. Wow, that's so calming.
Hey, Dan, are you on the phone? Hello?
Yes, we're here.
Oh, is Dan Heister on the phone?
I believe that he is out in the audience somewhere. I've seen comments that he's made, but I think that he's logged on as opposed to phoning in.
Can you verify that it's actually him? Because I have my doubts.
Oh, really? What is something that only Dan would know?
I'm sorry. I have interests that I can't compromise.
All right, Dan, you know someone's looking for you. All right, how are folks doing? Let's write down our final thoughts, and then we can come back together. Okay, now we're going to keep those in our pocket, and we're going to move on to slide 34. Now, here's scenario B. Here's a cool, collected, contemplative property owner slash PRP who's not angry. And what they're saying is, look, you know, I don't understand the cost-benefit ratio here. It seems like this is a lot of cost, but I don't really see what it is we're getting in return. So, you know, how do I know this is really worth it? It's my money, and I'd really like you to explain. Or maybe he's saying, I really want you to know that that section of land is virgin forest. It has never been built on, never been dumped in, and I can show you. So now the way that he's talking has changed. Take a couple minutes again to write down your thoughts about what your possible reactions, responses, and next steps would be to either one of these statements.
And I would cue the music, but I've got a lot of background going on in my house right now, I could certainly hum the Jeopardy theme if that's going to help anybody.
We're thinking the same thing.
Well, let's see, actually. Sometimes YouTube can be a... Oh, boy. I think I've got it.
All right. Okay, so let's go ahead and move on to slide 35, and we're going to discuss some. So I see there are some conversations happening here through the comment section. Now, you guys clearly know your stuff. Some of the things that people said for scenario one, some of the questions people asked, can you tell me why you think it's a waste? I might agree, and then we can save money on sampling there. Another response is, why don't you think sampling is needed down there? Can you show us how we can get the information that we need without sampling? Oh, you guys are good. You're only taking this class because you need it for recertification. You know this stuff. All right. I'm sorry. Keeps clicking around so I lose my place. You might check the site history, site observation record, see if there's any kind of indication of contamination. Maybe you agree with the PRP. If you do, you might point it out to him. Let him know where sampling is not required. The EPA is certainly open to reviewing information that shows that the area is unlikely to be contaminated because it's virgin forest. So I think that you guys get this. Your kind of initial understanding of the situation was that you knew that he was making a positional statement and you were asking really good questions about how you could get him to talk about what his interests were. And in the second things, he's giving some statements that are a little bit of a tell about what his interests might be, what some of his underlying interests might be. And so you talk about ways that you could try to better understand his interests. And, yes, EPA is certainly open to reviewing information that shows that the area is unlikely to be contaminated because it's virgin forest. You're happy to explain the risks and cost-benefit scenarios for him. Just reinforce that you need to know what he knows anecdotally. So I was hoping that there would be some folks out there who just didn't get what interests were and they would react to the position, and then in the second case you would have a situation where folks would see an interest and then be more able to respond to the interest than to the position. But in fact, you guys are good. So I just want to open it up really quick before we move on. Does everybody feel like they get what interests are and what positions are? All right. I'm gonna,
yes,
I'm gonna take that as a yes. Okay. Let's move on to generating multiple options. Slide 36. This is the second to last section. So generating multiple options, move on to slide 37, and we can talk about what options are. Options are possible ways of addressing people's interests. Options can address the concerns, the fears, desires of any party, so not just your interests, but the interests of others as well. Options can address one interest at a time or multiple interests at once. And then options can be packaged together to begin to form possible proposals for agreement. So where there are multiple interests at stake, and you have one option over here that meets that interest and another option over there that meets the other interest, you can start to pull them together and look at agreements. Moving on to slide 38. Why should you care about generating multiple options? If you have the best solution and you have the power to implement your solution, why do you have to bother thinking about multiple options? Generating multiple options means that you have more flexibility and more likelihood of agreement. So the more options you generate, the more likelihood that you're going to find a way through, and the more the better, right? The more options that are on the table, the more likely that you're going to find some great solution. Generating multiple options allows you to show good faith. So you can show your negotiating partners some good faith when you are clearly trying to address their interests by generating options that help them address their interests. In doing so, you're building relationships. If you can create a situation where you're looking at problems together, you are identifying the underlying problem and you're identifying interests and you're generating multiple options as a team trying to solve those problems. It's a great way to build relationships with folks, solving a common problem. Generating multiple options makes a silver bullet unnecessary. So maybe you've come up with a soil sampling plan. You think it's the bee's knees. For some reason, it may not work for somebody else. But if that's the only thing that you've got, if that's the only way that you have to solve the problem that you need to solve, it might create problems. So you might need to decompartmentalize the problem, disaggregate the problem, and look at different options for solving different pieces of the problem. And finally, and I'm not sure if Deb is with us right now, but coming up with multiple options might provide a better cure. And what I mean here, the chemotherapy example, chemotherapy is actually multiple different medicines that are being given all at once, and the group of them together has a synergistic effect and has a much greater impact than any of them individually. But if you were being treated for cancer, you might look at a bunch of different kinds of solutions that would altogether improve your outcome. So changing your diet, alternative therapies, surgery, chemo, radiation, these are all things that you can do, and you don't need to do each of them separately. You might double up or triple up or do them all in order to get the best possible results. So there's a synergistic effect to options. And when you generate multiple options, you can look around and you can say, hey, you know, we don't need to do just one of these things. Maybe we can do three of these things and get the best possible result. And Deb, are you around? No, she had another call that she had to take for a couple of minutes. The example that she was talking about was, I think, doing multiple testing methods at once. So, you know, doing some soil sampling here, and I don't know what they all were, but looking at multiple different ways of gathering information so that ultimately you have the most complete picture possible. All right, let's move on to slide 39. Look at where you're using multiple options and how you use multiple options in negotiation. So before you negotiate again, you're going to identify your underlying goals, you're going to identify your interests, you're going to look at that list, and you're going to brainstorm options by yourself or with your team. You're going to stretch that list out. You're going to reach a little bit more and find potential options that are going to, or you're going to find multiple options for each interest. You're going to stretch a little bit more in a different direction, and you're going to see if you can come up with options that meet multiple interests at once. You might want to ask other stakeholders in advance what ideas are out there, technical experts, more than one technical expert maybe, about what thoughts they might have about options that are out there. And during negotiations, you're going to do the same kinds of things. You're just going to do them with the other parties. You might want to redefine the problem you're trying to solve in conjunction with the parties, in conjunction with the other parties. So in this case, you would make sure that you understand the underlying goals and understand the interests. And you might want to do it so you have a shared perception of what that problem is, and then go ahead and start doing your brainstorming. And you're going to want to integrate any new information you get through your conversations with folks about their interests into the work that you did during the preparations. And same thing, you're going to search for multiple options, you're going to try to meet multiple interests, et cetera, et cetera. Right? Let's move on to slide 40. We're still talking about how I generate options in a negotiation. And here are just some suggestions for creativity when you're having some brainstorm blockage. You might want to change your view, meet someplace new, right? Change your perspective by changing your actual perspective. You might want to start the session with lots of time for individual brainstorming. And this is an interesting thing. I didn't know this until recently, that when you throw folks into a room and ask them to brainstorm, there's a lot of self-censoring going on. And that if you ask people to take 15 minutes at the start of the brainstorming session to just write down ideas by themselves on their own, they won't self-censor. So they will start out with a list of creative ideas that, more creative ideas for the rest of the brainstorming. So when you're building off of ideas that are already out there, you'll have a better set to start with than if you just jump straight into it. Of course, you're going to want to suspend judgment. In the cartoon, we see that there's a woman who's facilitating a brainstorming session, and she says, "We're brainstorming here, and there are no dumb ideas in this brainstorming session, but if we weren't brainstorming, that would have been a really, really dumb idea." So that's the opposite of what we want you to do. Suspend judgment. Let people have fun. It's okay to have impractical answers or ideas. Just throw them out there. You never know when one idea could lead to another idea. You never know when something that you think is impractical, I apologize, is actually realistic. Somebody else might have a piece of information that, you know, that they have that makes it work. Who knows? You're going to want to question perceptions and traditions. So this is we can't do that because we've never done that before. Or we have to do this because we've always done this. So just take yourself out of that reality for a minute and pretend that you didn't always do it that way, and look at how you might do it if you didn't do it that way. You're going to want to take apart the problem, solve the parts to solve the whole, and change your point of view. Think about how other people might solve the problem. And this doesn't have to be just your negotiating partners. Have some fun with it. How would Donald Duck see this problem? How would Attila the Hun see this problem? How would my great aunt Lucy see this problem? What might she want us to do here? What might be some ideas that great aunt Lucy would think of, or Scrooge McDuck, or, you know, whatever it is. Just going through the exercise of trying to see the world through somebody else's eyes will help you come up with ideas that you wouldn't have been able to come up with just being you as yourself. It sounds silly, but it's absolutely true. All right, slide 41. Let's move on. So let's go back to Mr. Contemplative, cool as a cucumber, PRP, and let's go back to the sampling plan. And he said that, you know, he wants us to know that that land is virgin forest and it has never been built on or dumped in. And so you guys have actually, some of you have already answered this question, but for those of you who haven't, take a couple minutes to write down your thoughts about possible options that would address the PRP's interests and would also address your interests as an OSC. And some of you guys have answered this really well already. Those of you who haven't thought about this particular scenario, please go ahead and just brainstorm for a couple of minutes. All right, how are folks doing? Are folks ready? I just want to point out to, I believe it was Earl Liverman, that Daniel Heister has a couple of messages for you that are not repeatable on a conference call.
Well, I would be disappointed had he not.
He also makes some allegations that you are not, in fact, working hard in Alaska, but are doing fun things instead.
Well, I'm on the phone, so sounds to me like Franklin's feeding him things.
Okay, so some thoughts about Mr. Virgin Forest over here. Somebody said that, you know, they're going to generate, one of their options is to get better background numbers, to access aerial photographs. That's a good idea. So you're going to want to verify what he's saying anecdotally. Another option is to go ahead and still take some samples. You might want to do samples in a phased way as opposed to going all out and doing everything all at once. Testing some areas that you have particular questions about first, and then if you find out that the areas that you were most concerned about have no problems, then maybe that's all you need to do. So does anybody have any ideas, anybody who's on the phone?
Well, another way, it's similar to an iterative approach. You just use screening efforts perhaps initially to either rule out or identify areas that would then be susceptible to greater investigation.
Right. I could never have said that. And so thank you for saying that. Absolutely. So do some screening up front and figure out whether you need to follow up and do further investigation. All right, so there are a bunch of different ways that you could do. Another thing that you might want to do here is go out and walk the property. Go out and look at maybe what his interest is just being respected for what he knows about his own property, right? You might still need to do some sampling, but you might be able to meet some other kind of interest that he has. If he wants to show you and he thinks he can show you, you might just want to see what it is he wants to show you, right? So I think that we are understanding what options are. So that would be a good time to ask if anybody has any questions at all about generating multiple options and how valuable it is in a negotiation before we move on to talking about objective criteria. Everybody's on board. That's great. So let's move on to slide 42, and let's talk about using objective criteria to evaluate options. All right. That is just a transition slide to tell you that we are on the last section of the last section. Yay! Not that you would be that happy, because I know you guys are enjoying this so much that you would just hang out with me all afternoon and talk about interest-based negotiations, right?
How many slides are left?
Such questions. If you include the evaluation form housekeeping question at or slide at the end, there are a total of 51. So if I do my arithmetic correctly, I believe that's 8 left. We're almost there. You can get back to salmon. Yeah, you can get back to your salmon fishing in just a second.
Hey, I have work to do.
All right. So what are objective criteria? Objective criteria are the standards by which options and possible solutions can be judged. Okay? They're the criteria that you're going to do your decision-making by. These criteria should be acceptable to all parties and applied equally to all options, regardless of who proposed them. So any criteria that you decide on is not going to be owned by one side. All parties must own this criteria equally, because it's the basis upon which your decisions are going to be made. Criteria can be procedural as well as data-based. Let me give you an example. You have two little kids. You have one piece of cake. You tell the kids one of you can cut the cake. The other one is going to pick which piece they want. So the process has embedded in it incentives for each side to want to be fair. Does that make sense? So I wanted to ask you guys, what are some common criteria or some common standards you use to evaluate options in your jobs? You know, the thing that is most often cited when we're talking about things like this is Blue Book values for cars, right? Edmunds.com. There are these sites out there that propose values for all of these different kinds of cars, and you can look at these different options. If you have a 1986 Honda Accord with air conditioning and a moonroof, you should expect to get paid this much, you should expect to sell for this much, et cetera, et cetera. That's a third-party tool that neither side owns, neither side influences, and that both sides can use together to figure out how much somebody should pay for or sell their car for, right? So that's an example of objective criteria. Does anybody have any ideas about stuff that they use in their jobs on a regular basis that they consider to be objective criteria that they use? If you can take a couple seconds to write down your thoughts, send them in if you're on the computer, shout them out if you're on the phone, take yourself off mute and give a shout. All right. So one person is talking about risk assessment standards for how clean is. Now, do you guys work with like ATSDR and other folks who deal with risk assessments and that kind of thing?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
State risk-based standards is another one. OSHA state standards as they apply to the job at hand. Oh, and you know what? I want to go back to a comment that came in for the last section, but it's applicable here as well. There may be political interest or public concern that's forcing us to show that there is no problem or that there's no risk, right? So there may be public outcry or public pressure that has nothing to do with the site cleanup, but kind of risk perceptions that you will also need to address. And we're going to talk about this really soon. Perception of risk is a real issue that's going to have to be dealt with. So yes, so you guys have standards out there that you know and that you use and that you can direct other folks to. There are lots. Soil cleanup criteria, drinking water criteria, MCLs, less than 2% asbestos, on and on and on. Those are great examples. So let's move on to slide 44, and let's take this perception of bias thing head on. Why should I care about objective criteria? It's clear that you guys understand that just because it's science doesn't mean that people perceive it as objective, right? I remember there was an interest-based negotiation course that I was teaching, and somebody in the course who had been working on a standard said very earnestly, look, you know, I've been using the scientific method to figure out this number. Science is objective. Therefore, my number is objective. Why can't they just see that? This number is objective. So, she, EPA, representing EPA, was putting together this assessment, and she came up with a number, and she believes the process that she used was the best possible process, and therefore the number that she came out with was the best possible number. And I have a cartoon here that says, you know, there's a guy holding a grant, and he says, you're completely free to carry out whatever research you want so long as you come to these conclusions. And we know that sometimes the public or some of our negotiating partners might believe that our motives in doing the scientific work we do are less than sterling, that we want to come up with answers that are just good answers for us to have. So perceptions of bias are real issues that have to be addressed in order for agreement to be reached. Using objective criteria is not just about using something that you think is objective. It's about coming to agreement on how you're going to make decisions and finding criteria that everyone agrees is valid. So in some ways, objective criteria is a misnomer. It's like mutually agreed upon criteria. You still have to make sure that it's going to let you do the evaluation that you need to do, but it needs to be mutually agreed upon. So developing objective criteria addresses perceptions of bias in selected solutions so that nobody owns the solution. If you're developing objective criteria together, it can also help avoid a situation where you've got dueling scientists. I've hired a scientist, and he's going to tell you why I'm right, and you've hired a scientist, and he's going to tell you why you're right, and then the scientists can fight it out. Using objective criteria and developing objective criteria together can also help with dealing with power imbalances between the parties if you're doing it together. So one of the terms that we use is joint fact-finding. You've defined the problem together, you've defined your interests together, and now you're going to define your criteria together, and you're going to go about that process as a team, as opposed to as other side or opposite sides to a fight. Does anybody have any questions about that or any examples that they have? Ah, somebody commented that the guy in the cartoon is actually with BP. And let me see, 1 second. Ah, okay. Yes, we work with, yes, okay. Great. So everybody's on board with that. Now, how do I use objective criteria in a negotiation? Slide 45. So before you negotiate, you can look for the blue book equivalent, right? You're going to look at all of the standards that you guys mentioned. You're going to look at anything that might have scientific merit that might be a precedent that everybody understands. You're going to find as many different sources as possible. Don't just rely on one thing if you can avoid it. Invite data from other folks. Invite questions about what assumptions might be in the data. share your data and receive feedback before you even start negotiating, so you know what people's questions are before you start. So during negotiations, you can try to frame all your problems, the underlying problems, as a joint search for objective criteria. And Deb is not with us yet, but I wanted to tell you about a situation that we're dealing with now on the Enbridge oil spill out in Region 5 in Michigan on the Kalamazoo River. The Enbridge is the PRP. They're the company that owns the pipe, and they have so far done a really good job. What they have done is they're working with the EPA and other folks, and they're right now in the process of putting together a sort of blue ribbon panel that's going to be facilitated, and there are going to be representatives that are going to handle technical questions as they arrive. So this is a group of people who together represent trusted folks who can answer questions. So when technical questions come up, the fact that it is these people who are giving them the answer, and everybody has agreed that the answers that these people will provide will be the answers, is an example of how you can frame the problem up and do kind of a joint search for objective criteria. You can do it yourself. You can find some mutually agreed upon technical experts to help you do it. Either way is fine. You just need to make sure that everything is mutually agreed upon. And, you know, make sure that it all goes back to your interests. Make sure that you're open to reason. So let's visit our friend on slide 46, our cool as a cucumber PRP and his virgin land. And let's figure out some objective criteria. So we've had a couple, we've thought about some options for how we might deal with. Let's think about objective criteria that we might use in our discussions with Mr. Virgin Land to evaluate whether these options are going to give us the information that we need. Right? So write them down. Shout them out. This is your last chance, y'all. This is the last role play. All right, let's see where we are. Let's take a couple minutes to finish up your thoughts. That's a couple seconds, I should say. Okay, I'm going to throw out a couple. One of them might be time to implement, cost of possible solutions. Right? Those might be some lenses through which you might want to evaluate your options, and you might want to find some ways of coming to objective criteria that help you deal with those. You might want to have a kind of blue ribbon panel that helps you make some decisions. All right. Let's call an end to this madness. Let's move to slide 47. We're going to start wrapping up. Slide 48. Now that we've gone through all of this and we've talked about all of this, I'm going to try to give you a metaphor to help think about these things in a slightly different way, to kind of reground some of these same concepts and terms, right? So let's think about your negotiating space as a three-dimensional space. Now, first, you're going to think about the floor, your needs, the basic interests and underlying goals that if you don't get these things, you can't do a negotiation, essentially. You will need to walk away if you can't get these things. You need to find some other way of doing what you need to do. right? The bottom line. Your aspirations are the ceilings. Wouldn't it be great if the PRP just gave me a blank check at the beginning of it and said, you're right, mea culpa, I completely screwed up, do whatever you need to do, here's the keys to all of my facilities. That would be great. That may not happen in reality. But you want to think about what those things are. Generating options starts to help you define your space. So now you've got your floor and your ceiling and you have no walls. So you want to start thinking about what could the rooms be? Could you get some windows here? Could you get some, you know, bigger rooms or better design? You want to have great flow from the kitchen to the drawing room, and you're just going to come up with as many different possible ideas for different spaces between the floor and the ceiling that you can come up with. And finally, the objective criteria are going to help you and your negotiating partners come to a decision on the right floor plan for you. So you're going to start saying, okay, well, you know, I have an interest in making sure that there's a bathroom next to the bedroom because, you know, I have certain problems and I need to be close to a bathroom when I'm sleeping or something. Who knows, right? So you're going to come up with multiple ways of creating that, and then you're going to go back to your interests and make sure that all of your interests are met. You're going to make sure that you've checked with some objective criteria like engineering standards, make sure the whole thing won't fall down on you, right? And once you've done that, you will have a space that is agreed upon by everybody. And hopefully the floor plan will be right, and you'll have some nice, bright, sunny rooms that make everybody happy. Does that work for you? Does that make sense? Did that just totally screw up everything that I've been trying to explain over the last 2 hours? Let me know. If you hate it, I won't use it ever again. But so, you know, it's the illusion of the house, the metaphor of the house. So, moving on to slide 49. In the next module, we are going to look at skills to improve communication. We're going to focus on three things. We're going to focus on asking good questions, active listening, and reframing. In other words, we're going to try to help you turn angry PRP into cool, contemplative PRP. Anybody have any final questions? We have like a minute to go. You can always feel free to email me, email the other instructors, Deb, Dalton, and Terry, and we will share the questions that you've sent and get back to you with some answers. Feel free to call us. I think you have all of our phone numbers. Last call for questions. All right.
Do we need to ask Earl what kind of fish he caught?
Yes, Earl, if you could go ahead and dry pack the fish, freeze dry it or whatever, and send us all samples, that would be excellent.
I will do that.
Okay. Via email.
I'm working.
Okay.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
All right. Okay,
well,
Dean,
samples are working fish samples.
Yes.
Absolutely. It's affectionately referred to as a creel survey.
Here we go.
All right, so, Jean, I think that you have the last slide.
I have the last word here. Yes,
yeah.
Excellent. So thank you all to everybody who hung through with us for the full 2 hours. I'm going to direct everyone to the final slide, which is slide number 51. And there you will find those two very important links that I mentioned, the first one being the additional resources page where you can download these slides and other useful web references and resources. But the link that I think most of you are going to be clamoring for is the second one, which is the feedback form link. So if you're looking at the slides in your web browser, you can click on the hyperlink that says feedback form, and that will open up the online feedback form that you must complete along with the correct secret password, which you have to fill it out all the way at the bottom of the feedback form. There's a spot for it. And you must submit that to get full credit for participating today. Again, if you are not in front of a computer, if you have a print copy of these slides, you can also get to that feedback form link at the bottom of the seminar homepage. So when you registered, you got a confirmation email. There was a URL for the homepage. And at the bottom of that homepage, there's a link that says submit feedback for this session. If you have any difficulties getting to the feedback form, please, by all means, send an email to me, Jean Balent. Again, Balent, B-A-L-E-N-T, .J-E-N, at EPA.gov, and I will get you the direct URL for the feedback form. If you are sharing the line, each and every one of you must each fill out that feedback form to get credit. So I know the guys in Region 1 as well as Region 7. If you want to take turns filling out the form now, you can do that. Once you fill out feedback, you'll have a link that appears to have another person fill out form, or someone else can complete the same form. Or again, as long as you know the seminar homepage, anybody can go to that feedback form link at the bottom and fill it out on your own time. So just a thank you to everybody who helped put this session together, everyone who was able to spare times in their busy schedules, and those of you who made the effort to still participate even though you were in some remote locations and it was difficult. I do appreciate it. If you had problems today or weren't able to sit in on the full session, there is another delivery which will be held this week. I believe it's this Friday. Yep. The same module. So module one is being redelivered this Friday. You can find details. You can email me and I'll send you the link to sign up for that one if you want. Those of you who did complete this one successfully should be prepared and raring to go for the second module, which will be delivered, depending on when you signed up, either September 28th or the 29th. So, again, please fill out that feedback form. Send me an email if you have any problems. And I just wanted to thank the instructors who came in from the EPA's Conflict Prevention and Resolution Center and did their best to make this an entertaining and, I think, a useful expenditure of your time. Thank you to the OSCs. And I'm going to formally close out today's presentation. So you guys are free to hang up on the phone lines and turn off your computers or get back to those busy work days that I'm sure you have in front of you. And just, again, email me if you have any questions or need help with anything. Thank you all. Have a great day.